there is no guarantee for success, but there are ways to get closer to it when you do the right things. Who you surround yourself with is just as important as what you do. Finding the right people, the right classes, the right activities, and taking the right tests are all decisions that shape your future. Find out more today on Destination University with Dr. Cynthia Colon. Dr. Colon and her guests will give you the tips you need, whether you're a student, parent, or educator. Now, here is your host, Dr. Cynthia Colon.
By the time your child is a senior in high school, you've likely been on literally hundreds of family outings, adventures, road trips, and vacations together. With each one of those comes life lessons, big and small. First, you support him on the playground and teach him how to climb, jump, and swing across those monkey bars. You teach her how to kick the soccer ball, pass to teammates, and share in the victory and defeat. The lessons about history come with a trip to Washington, D.C., to Lincoln Memorial, Arlington National Cemetery, or the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Lessons of science and nature come with a visit to Yosemite National Park, Mount Rushmore, or the Grand Canyon. It is quite possible that the college admission process is designed to bring families together, in many ways, for the last time, for the final life lessons. On any outing or family trip, as a parent, your first instinct is the safety and security of your child. And perhaps, above all, what you desire most for your child on any outing or road trip is their happiness. How much they smile, laugh, and enjoy their time simply makes your heart sing. Our guest today shares how the college selection process is much the same. Finding a safe home, a secure room, a college that makes your teen light up. It's a family process. Ken Enselman is the Vice President for Enrollment and Communication at Lawrence University, the nation's only college of arts and sciences and conservatory of music dedicated solely to undergraduate education. Ken is also a survivor of the college search process. He enjoyed the process so much that he and his wife are going through the process again this year with their daughter, Katie, a senior in high school. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. Cynthia Colon, author of the book Tips, Tales, and Truths for Teens. Welcome to Destination University, where we explore extraordinary people who lived ordinary childhoods and found a pathway to college. If you are a parent of a college-bound teen or a champion of one, you are exactly where you're supposed to be. By being here today, you are helping to grow the community of informed families across the nation. So thank you for joining the movement. Today's episode is number 53, and today's lesson, the college gates are open. Where will you find your room? Okay, listeners, I won't make you wait any longer. I'm going to get right to this interview because you are going to love Ken. He is so knowledgeable, and quite frankly, he's quite a hoot. He had me laughing and with his dad jokes, and he's just too funny. So let's get this party started. Well, hello and welcome, Ken. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Cynthia. Thanks for having me on the show. It's exciting to be here. Digitally here.
Yes. I am so excited to have you. And just before we went live, listeners, we discovered that I was on the Cows tour years and years ago and have been to see a number of Wisconsin schools. And I have been on the Lawrence campus. So you're in for a treat today. Be sure to get your pen and paper out because Ken has loads of golden nuggets to share with you today.
Oh my goodness, that's a lot of pressure.
Well, just before I formally introduced you to the listeners so they know all about you and how great it's going to be to have you. But I'm going to guess that most of our listeners have not been to Wisconsin.
Why not?
Well, you know, I don't know because
we can change that.
Well, I can't wait for them to hear your story and your journey. But for now, let's give our listeners a little taste of Lawrence. Sort of, what are you looking outside of your window or outside your office at Lawrence?
If I were looking outside my office, I would be describing a parking lot, which isn't going to be really exciting. So let's just imagine that I've cut a hole in my window and I've clambered up to the rooftop of our building. And now I am looking directly to the west, where I can see Appleton, Wisconsin itself. And for those who may not be familiar with Appleton, you may hear Appleton and think it's a teeny tiny little place where all the cows roam free. But it's actually a pretty large city. It's a city of about 75,000 in the heart of a metro area of about 250,000. So important, especially for any of your folks who may be near an airport. We do have an international airport. It's called Appleton International Airport, a real thing, I swear to you. And it's like 6-7 miles from campus, 6 or 7 miles. So it's easy to get to. And then if I pivot a little bit to the south, I'll see the Fox River, which runs right along the southern end of our campus, right at the bottom of some 30 to 40 foot bluffs. And what's cool about the Fox and about Appleton and about Lawrence is that they're all kind of inextricably intertwined. I'm really glad I said that without breaking my tongue muscle. But the city was actually born at the same time as Lawrence University was. Amos Lawrence was a wealthy Boston merchant who commissioned some friends of his who were Methodist ministers back in the day to build a college out on the frontier. And so they found this great spot along the rapids of the Fox River, decided to start the college there. And Amos Lawrence needed some cash at the time, so he offered to build a city nearby named for his father-in-law, Samuel Appleton, and that was the seed money that helped get the institution started. So Lawrence and the city were actually born at the same time back in 1847, the year before Wisconsin became a state.
Wow, that's interesting history. Now, I love it, secretly have a love of when I interview people from outside the state of California and really closer Midwest and East, because there's so much history to share, and that unfortunately, so many of us don't know about. So thank you.
Well, a fun piece of history, if you're talking history too, is that Appleton itself was the first city in the United States to produce electricity commercially. Having that river nearby made it pretty handy. So we had the first electric hotel, first electric trolley system. New York thought it was such a bright idea, pun intended. Probably not the last dad joke I make, but New York caught on 2 weeks or 2 weeks later after Appleton did. But another interesting fact is that homes in Appleton had electricity 10 years before the White House did.
Fun fact.
There you go.
Now, I want people to know just a few things, and we'll have some time at the end to share more about Lawrence, but what's maybe two or three fun facts that you love most about Lawrence?
Well, you know, Lawrence itself is unusual in the college space. We are a college of arts and sciences and a conservatory of music. And as far as we know, we're the only one in the country that's dedicated exclusively to undergraduate education. So no graduate students, it's all first-year students through seniors and super seniors, those who are actually earning 2 degrees in 5 years. We do a double degree at Lawrence that you'll probably remember from that tour you took.
Yeah.
So about 3/4 of our students are in the college, about 25% of our students are in the conservatory. But sometimes when students hear conservatory, they think, oh, it's one of those places that's off limits, except for the, you know, highly perfectionist musicians. And Lawrence is not that kind of place. It's a place where we have a ton of students who want to study biology, but don't want to leave their musical lives behind. And so they pack up their instruments and they play along with Lawrence students in the conservatory. They form great ensembles. In fact, all the ensembles are open audition for any Laurentian to participate in. So it's this really great, chill musical experience where we're producing world-class music and our students are having a lot of fun doing it.
That's so great because, you know, so many high school students, and even before getting to high school, are pursuing some love, some passion. And so you're right. Like sometimes that you get to discovering different colleges and you're thinking, I'm going to have to choose a major and have to leave this other part of my life behind. So I'm glad you said that they want to major in, you know, whatever, biology or whatever it is they're majoring in, but don't have to let go of that other part of them.
That's right. That's right. And they get to use their entire brain and their entire selves. It's not an either or place. It's a both and kind of place.
My roommate in college was a music major and she played the oboe.
Oh, nice.
I know. It was great to have, I mean, something I would never otherwise experience. I mean, mm-hmm. That's not part of my life growing up. And so, yeah. And her name was Kathy O. And so I used to call her Kathy Oboe.
If her name were Kathy B, would it, she have been maybe a bassoonist? Or okay, that's dad joke number two. For okay. Those of you keeping score at home. Right.
Keep track. Yeah. Write those golden nuggets down and those dad jokes. I love it. Well, Ken, tell us, our listeners do like to know about our guests and your own journey, your path to college. Who were you in high school and who were your supporters, your cheerleaders, your believers?
Sure. Turning on the Wayback Machine, like we're going back to the last millennium here, Cynthia. Thanks. Thanks for that. I went to, from what it sounds like, some of your guests, this is a theme. So I spent most of my later years in Jesuit education, actually. So I went to Marquette University High School in Milwaukee. I went to Marquette University after that, and we can get to that in a bit. But in high school, I was... I think the kind of kid my daughter would now refer to as a meek. We would have called them nerds or geeks or something like that when we were younger. But I was an athlete. I was one of those community service kids, one of those student government kids, one of those please a whole lot of people type of kids, mm-hmm. Who focused a little too much on his academics. Sometimes, to the detriment of his mental balance. How about that? But in terms of cheerleaders, it was a really supportive place. But oddly enough, my college search, I don't know why, despite having great resources available to me. I mean, it's a place where you have extraordinary access, right? And, you know, we live in this professional space now where we talk about access to great college counseling. I didn't take advantage of it. I did it kind of on my own and probably looked to the wrong inspirations for what, you know, how to build my college list. Unlike a lot of the students that we're looking at today, I only had two schools on my list. Mm-hmm. One was Marquette, right down the street from Marquette High School. The other was Notre Dame, which, you know, that was on the list because, you know, if you are an Irish Catholic boy, the oldest and only son, the greatest thing you can do for your mother if you don't enter the priesthood is go to Notre Dame. So that was on the list for me. But the person who ended up being one of my greatest cheerleaders in the whole college search process actually was a college admission professional herself. Mm-hmm. And her name is Jane Eddie Casper, and she was the counselor at Marquette University who learned more about me and my family and what my motivations were and had just this uncanny knack for sending me the note at just the right time or, you know, making the phone call right at the right time to see how I was doing. And I felt like I had this person who really cared about who I was. I didn't know this at the time, but someone who was planting the seeds for a desire to become an admission professional himself. So Jane just, she wowed my family. We just got the feeling that this is a place that was going to take really, really good care of me. And they did. And she personally did. In fact, my first Christmas break, my freshman year, I was looking for a gig. She asked me if I'd be interested in stuffing envelopes in the admissions office. And I said, okay, that sounds like a great idea. Cause that's what I sounded like when I was 18 years old. You know, one thing led to another. I became an admissions tour guide. Stop me if you've heard this story before from other guests, but you live in that environment and you start to see this intersection of college mission and professional career and think maybe that's something I could do. So it was, Yeah, Jane, I am so grateful for being the person that helped me find my way to Marquette and helped me find my way into this profession.
Now, let's stick on this point for a second, because yeah. I love when my guests talk really about how human the process is. Mm-hmm. And because I think that listeners don't believe us, but I would say, you know, this process is not objective, but it is subjected to humans. And so speak more about what that was like, because you said, listeners, write this down. It was very personal. She wrote the notes at the right time, and she wowed your family. And the your family felt like this was a place that would take care of you.
So yeah.
Can you share more about that? Maybe what mom and everybody else felt as well as you?
Well, my mother loved Jane, and I couldn't call her Jane, not because of my mother, but she was Mrs. Casper. And in fact, it just became like this long running joke that I just wouldn't bring myself to call her Jane. I had so much respect for her. So instead, I started calling her Mom when I was at Marquette. And she's still, I'm remembering this now, and I'm actually probably going to get a little misty, but she's even sent me notes long after graduation. I mean, long after graduation. They recently knocked down the residence hall that I lived in for 3 years at Marquette. And true to Marquette form, they turned it into an opportunity to move some product. And so they made these neat little can koozies, you know, for your soda can, because the building itself was round and looked like a can, so it lent itself well to this. Anyway, Jane sent me this little koozie just out of the blue with a note and just telling me about what she's doing with her life. And she's, you know, learning another language, and she signed it, you know, Mom. And it just, and this has been going on now 3 decades.
Wow.
And so talk about commitment to the profession. And, you know, she's somebody that my parents still remember. And she must have done something right to plant that seed too, because my two younger sisters, both of whom had 0% interest in going to the college where their brother was enrolled, ended up finding themselves at the college where their brother ended up enrolling. It just became this place that they believed in. And so she's extraordinary. I'm sure it sounds like it. coming out. I had great teachers at Marquette High, people who taught me how to write, taught me how to think. But Jane saw something in me and really put me on a path that I'm forever grateful that she did.
You know, that's a theme, I think, with all of our guests, that someone at some point in their journey, it could have been middle school, it could have been high school, and for you, it was the in between, right? Going from high school to college and then beyond.
Yeah.
So, right. This is a family process. Do you remember going to visit the campus with your family all together dropping you off? Like what family do you have?
No. But listeners, if you want a textbook case on how not to do the college search, listen closely here. My first visit to Marquette's campus was an unofficial visit. I was on the track team at Marquette High. I was a pole vaulter, and pole vaulters run a notoriously short distance. I mean, it's like 100 feet, 120 feet. Right. And so when they had us run from the high school down to the lakefront for this like 5 mile round trip, I wasn't having any of that. So the other pole vaulters and I, when we ran past the Marquette University campus, kind of ducked in and hid and waited for the team to come back so we could catch them on the return trip to the high school. And then I ended up walking around like, my God, this place actually has grass and it's beautiful. Like I'd only seen it from Wisconsin Avenue growing up and thought, well, this is worth a look. Didn't officially set foot in the admissions office until I dropped my application off at the end of the business day, because that was, you know, pre-electronic submission. Dropped my application off in person in the admissions office on the very last day that you could turn it in. Right? Again, not great advice other than don't do it this way.
Yeah.
And then, and so it, there wasn't a great arrival with my family at Notre Dame or at Marquette when we did our visit experiences. It was just kind of serendipitous that I experienced them, not intentional. It wasn't something I necessarily went after on purpose myself.
I love that you're saying this is exactly how not to do it.
Well, it is, but
everybody has their journey.
Well, and that's part of the thing, though, too, is that I think we sometimes look to everybody else and think, I've got to do it just like this person. And the answer is, no, you don't. I see that in my own kids who, one has gone through the college search process and one is a high school senior right now. And just the pressure to do it right. There is no right. You know, what's right for you is what's right. Right. Not what's right for your friend or the kid you don't really know, but is super popular at your school and, you know, is letting everybody know on Instagram, you know, what they're doing when they're visiting, yada, yada, yada. That's not being true to yourself.
Now, I have to just ask this quick question because I want to talk about you being a parent, but I have to ask, listen to you?
No.
Do they listen to your advice? I mean, you are either the VP at Lawrence, you've been doing this for years. Do you have the same thought as most parents? Like, they just don't listen to me?
Well, I have some utility, I guess. We'll put it that way. Okay. There are times they can really compartmentalize what they listen to when it comes to dad's advice. If it has to come, when it comes to specifics about the college application process, I'm a great resource and they'll use me. When it comes to other things, maybe less so. So, you know, congratulations to them for being independent. case in point, one of the things I've had to do as a parent and a professional is put aside my own personal interests in this, which is I've really had to put my money where my mouth is because, you know, my kids could go to Lawrence University and have a sweet tuition remission deal. Mm-hmm. And I could, you know, put my foot down and say, that's where you're going. I mean, we earned this. Then that's not their interest. They want to fly. They want to go to another place. And so we put that aside. None of them's interested in a small liberal arts college. So that rules out the Associated Colleges of the Midwest, where there's also a great tuition benefit. They wanted to go to larger schools and larger urban environments. And so, you know, they looked at a different class of schools, some of whom have tuition benefits, most of whom do not. And so we're kind of in the boat with a whole lot of other parents. And I will raise my hand and acknowledge to all of you parents out there, a professional admissions person made a mistake on his FAFSA this year. Yes, I screwed up our own FAFSA. No. I made a mistake. When? So it's good being human. And I did reach out to the financial aid offices at the school and just say, look, feel free to, you know, take a corner off my NACAC card for this, but it's an easy mistake. It was an easy mistake. There was an IRA rollover that somehow got anyway, that's details we don't need to get into. But when it comes to the college search itself, my kids do have some advantages because I can help them make sense of financial aid documents that can sometimes be impenetrably difficult to understand. It's made me a more sympathetic admission professional on how we communicate things to families and the things that we use, you know, the language we use every day that we think, well, surely everybody understands what a bursar is. No, or a registrar, no. And so it's really trying to be, you talk about human, try to make the process more humane for families.
Yes. Oh gosh, these are golden nuggets for you. I'm thinking for you because there's a whole vocabulary, right? Mm-hmm. That you enter and you don't know what that is. That you're making me remember just as a student. I was like, you know, you go to the bursar's office to make your payment. I'm like,
okay,
what does that even mean? How does that even make sense?
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. Like, where else would I have learned that word or that, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. I think it was Rick Clark at Georgia Tech was, he and I were talking about removing all the hard words in college admission. And a lot of men did AR, registrar, bursar, transfer czar. But yeah, it's sometimes we make it more complicated than I think we need to. That's for sure.
Well, I wanted to close the loop on your high school journey, and digress. And so much to talk about. This is why it's so great to talk to you, because you are a parent and obviously an administrator. But to close the loop about high school, your high school years, looking back now and in the role you have, what advice would you give to your younger self? What can you say to parents that are listening or that will pass this on to their teens? Or there could be college-bound teens who are listening.
There's probably a theme on that a little bit earlier, which is don't do what everybody else is doing. Make your deadlines, do all those sorts of things, but recognize that your journey is your journey and it's nobody else's journey. Not even your parents, not your siblings. You're the one that has to live with the decision that you'll ultimately make. So it's not just looking to what everybody else is doing, but also don't try to do what you think other people want you to do. That sounds really difficult for students in a process where it is such an interdependent process on the college admission professionals, on parents, guardians, whoever is involved with the decision-making process. But, I have a professor from Marquette who told me that I was the guy at the dance who always waited for people to come up and ask me to dance rather than the one who would go and ask somebody else to dance. And so if I could go back and talk to 17-year-old Ken or 16-year-old Ken, it would probably be to ask more and to take some of those risks that maybe you were afraid to take. Make the ask yourself. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is that the person you asked to dance with says, no thanks. And you're like, okay, great. And even if they said no, you've gained something in the process, and not the least of which is that someone saying no to you isn't the worst thing in the world that can happen to you. Helps build resilience, makes you a little bit tougher, makes you a little bit less risk averse. And so despite the fact that I loved the choice that I made, Marquette, it wasn't my first choice. I mean, Notre Dame was the place I really, really, really wanted to go. But I chose Marquette, and I guess that's another piece of advice, and one that we often give to people is most students end up fitting just fine with the place that they end up enrolling in, even if it's not their first choice or their second choice or their third choice. Make sure that your choices are places that you can feel reasonably confident that you're going to have the kind of life that you imagine you might want to have in those schools. But I would have applied to more schools. I would have taken some more risks just to see what might have happened.
Oh, I love that. Well, so many of us, I would say our age, I imagine we're a similar age, to apply to just a handful or less than a handful of schools. And I think, many people today are somewhere between 8 and 12.
Oy.
And many more than that.
We know.
as long as the list is a list that I would say there should not be a single college on this list that you would not be happy at.
Yeah.
So there's plenty to choose from. So the safety, well, I don't know if there's such thing as a safety school anymore, but your safety or target schools should be inclusive of ones that you would find great joy in. So.
Agree. And know that you're not going to know until you get there. We're seeing that with our daughter right now, which is she had this list of schools that she was completely content with and then started hearing from her friends how many schools they were applying to and then started feeling this pressure to apply to more schools and just started adding other schools. I'm like, do you know anything about this place? Well, no, but I've heard it's really good. Oh, yeah.
No.
Okay, let's do some more research and find out if it's actually really good for you.
Yeah, good advice, Dad. Listeners, write that down.
It may be good, but good and good for you are sometimes two different things.
Well, you have had quite a career, and you have read tens of thousands of essays.
Couple.
And applicants, but share if you can, maybe one or two applicants that you remember in the last few years, you know, what makes them stand out? So, yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't get to read a whole lot of applications anymore, given my role, which encompasses a pretty broad swath of the institution. So I've got admissions and financial aid and communications and retention, yada, yada, yada. A bunch of things that some of your student listeners might be like, what are all those? What did you just describe? And stop complaining about it. But because I'm in the role I'm in, I get this really sweet curated list of essays where one of the admissions professional, one of the admission officers will say, oh, Ken, you're going to love this one. Just read this one. And I'll get, you know, a few dozen a year that people will just refer me to read. And so it may not be representative of the whole group, but I guess thematically the things I get, they're honest. At least I believe they're honest.
Yeah.
You know, we have to approach this process with a certain amount of good faith, on both sides, students and the college admission folks. But, sometimes they're funny. Sometimes they're heartbreaking. Some are just totally average, but spot on authentic. You know who that person is.
Yeah.
And they remind me of what a privilege it is to get to read the thoughts of these students who are at such an important part in an important time in their lives. There was one essay that I remember Galen from my team sent me. She gets to work with students in New Mexico and Arizona and Texas. And there was this story about a student who talked about communities that he grew up in that all formed this larger family that were beyond the family that he was raised in. This is a student who has a really, he's an undocumented student and has had to find so many different supports in the school, in the community, in his family, in his town, and just wove this really beautiful textured story about his community that he's bringing with him, that it's not just him, it's this whole community of folks that are coming with him to college. And it was beautifully written. I've seen essays like that before, but the way he did it, it wasn't a performance. It just was honest and raw and it worked. And those have been the essays that have gotten me for decades. I mean, I still remember an essay from a student I read when I was on the staff at Marquette, and this was probably 30 years ago, who talked about a terrible accident that happened when he was whitewater rafting with his family. And in the process of this essay, he talked about, and this was back in the 90s, he was talking about coming to terms with his identity as a gay young man, which was a really risky thing to write about back in the 90s, much less so now. But this was a student whose his whole essay was about coming to terms with who he was and understanding being on the precipice of college and what this might represent to him.
Did you say that was an application to Marquette University?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. A Catholic school. Yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And he ended up going to Marquette, and he's done incredible things with his life. There are essays that students write about the process of writing, these super meta essays that are fun to read.
Yeah.
They talk about the craft of the art that they work on. It may be some particular nerdery that they really love. I treasure reading those sorts of things because those are the things where you really get a sense of who that person is beyond the list of activities and the letters of recommendation.
Now, I just have to say that if you didn't catch that, listeners, Ken just said that he gets his staff, the admission officers, who will give him some of their best essays. And he said he gets about a dozen per year. It's not a whole lot. And when I worked at Vassar College, it was the thing that I loved the most about the application. I would imagine it's the thing that everybody loves most about the application. And so when I became a college counselor, it's the thing that we really focused on in helping students to reflect on who they are, what they value most in their life at this very moment in their life, and to tell that story.
Yeah.
I think that my next question is about the truth. You know, the book is called Tips, Tales, and Truths, and sort of you can share, you know, your truth that you wish people knew and also a tip.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can stick on this point for a second about the essays, can you share with our listeners why the essays are so valued in this process?
Well, it'll depend on the college, of course, how much value the admissions office places on the essay. But at a place like Lawrence, where writing is such an important part of the academic experience, we want to get a sense of what's your story and how well can you tell your story? We're not expecting perfectly polished prose. If it were perfect, you probably could make a career as a writer. And so what we want to get a sense of as readers at Lawrence is what sort of raw materials are we working with? For us, it's also more of an insight into who you are. It doesn't have to be, what's the unique story? Those are really hard to find. But what's your unique personal take on a story that maybe is something that a lot of students are living, but what does it mean to you? Mm-hmm. We read less so at Lawrence than maybe at Marquette, but we read a lot of stories about people who blew out an ACL. Mm-hmm. Right? We had a physical therapy program there, so we'd get a lot of students. That was their inspiration to go into the doctor of physical therapy program. Yeah. You want to write an essay like that, that's fine. Understand that that's well-traveled territory. So what's different about your experience? Mm-hmm. What do you think is different about your experience? What did you learn from it? How did it change you? And if you're not super comfortable if you're not confident that that's going to be totally insightful about who you are, maybe there's a different story. Maybe there's a story. There's a story that someone can help you find to tell instead. But I think there's so much pressure on students too to write the most unique, which is impossible because it's either unique or it's not, essay.
Yeah.
The other thing, the piece of advice I'll give students about the essay too is write the essay you want to write, not the essay you think I want to read, which sounds interesting, I guess. But to underscore the example, I do point out that back in the day when we were at Marquette, there was an essay question we had one year that went something like, you're about to embark on a lengthy journey in a 2-passenger car with no radio. Whom would you choose as your traveling companion and why? Marquette's a Catholic school, so who do you think was the number one traveling companion that we got the year we asked that essay, right? So we got a lot of I'd want to take a road trip with Jesus essays, followed by I want to take a road trip with the Pope essays. And for some kids, those were great essays. For other kids, you could tell it was a student saying, well, Marquette's a Catholic school. The right answer is, Jesus or the Pope. And then it became like this, pro forma 5-part essay with the intro paragraph and 3 supporting paragraphs and a concluding paragraph, and it was, a snore. So write the essay you want to write, not the one you think we want to read.
I love that. Good, good piece of advice. Write that down. So what is your truth? What is the big piece? Again, I said earlier that parents often think this is an overwhelming and daunting experience and mysterious process. So describe the truth that you want to share with our listeners.
I'd say that despite all the stories in the news that focus on hyper-selective colleges, most colleges are admitting most of their students. Whenever I get a group together, full disclosure, I am very much in the church of the colleges that change lives, CTCL.
Yep.
And I have done this exercise at some of their national roadshows where I give students the essay or the quiz followed by an auction, which is, okay, there are, more than 2,000 4-year colleges and universities in the United States. What percentage of those colleges admit more than half of their applicants? And it's so much fun to watch people, throw out the first bid is like 5% or 20% or, and it's usually skewing towards the low end of the scale. You get the Price is Right person that's like, 1%. But when I then pull up the, multiple choice and say, is it A, 85%, or B, 85% or see, and then they start to realize, oh my God, really? It's that? That's crazy. That, and it doesn't square with everything that they've heard. Mm-hmm. And so it gives an entry point to say, look, the stories about college admission tend to focus on the most selective colleges in the country as if they are the norm, and they're not. You know, the average acceptance rate, I think, according to NACAC studies, yeah, it's more than 60% mm-hmm. in the country. And so it happens every time I'm in a room when I share this with people, that you can see them stand up a little bit straighter and go, okay, wait a minute. This might be a little different than the world has led me to believe. If you're applying to the most selective colleges, it's going to be a much more challenging endeavor, but most students aren't applying to the most selective colleges in the country. It's a really long answer to the truth.
More people need to hear this because you're right. They just, because of all the hype, they just don't believe it. Yeah. And, or I typically say, you found me or you found this podcast or whatever, because at least one or two of the colleges on your list do happen to admit fewer than 50% or
for sure.
So, you know, you're looking for that, or that's the dream college or whatever. But the truth is, most colleges are admitting most of their applicants.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Including mine.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and most of us got into this line of work not because we like saying no to people. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's actually probably why I left Vassar. I was like, I can't do this anymore.
I love being the kind of gatekeeper that says, look, the gate's open. Let's see which room inside the gate is going to fit well for you.
Ooh. Gates open. Write that down. Say that again.
I've never said it before, so let's see if I can get it right. But, you know, the gate is open. Let's see which room inside is a good fit for you.
Mm. Love that. That's good. I'm writing it down. So
I'm not saying that we are an open enrollment institution, but we're really trying to find ways that students fit with our institution, not reasons not to admit them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So good. And I think that most everybody, even people who work at highly competitive schools,
they're saying yes.
Looking for reasons to admit you.
Yes.
Open the file, I guess. You don't open the file anymore like I did. So you click open a file on your computer and you're looking, you're starting with go. How can I admit this?
Yeah. A bias to yes. Yeah. Yeah. I gained enormous sympathy for my colleagues at highly, highly selective institutions when I became a reader for the National Merit Scholarship Competition. Mm-hmm. And realizing that, you know, you've got so many applicants and they're all awesome, and you have to take only a sliver of them. And that's painful, painful, painful work. And I know it's painful for students to get the news that they weren't hoping to hear. But it does make me sympathize more with my colleagues that have those very difficult decisions to make, where you're choosing among a lot of really great options and you can only offer a tiny handful.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. So the tip. I know you have several tips, and I want you to get to all of them because they're all so great. So what is the best tip that you can offer for parents, for students, for, you know, anybody who's going through this process at any point in their journey?
Well, I would say for the students, I'd remind them that they have agency in this process. And, you know, insider tip, given where demographics are headed in this country, especially in the next decade and a half, students are going to have even more power in the process because there's going to be fewer students out there of the so-called traditional college-going age. So the demographic studies show that there's going to be a big, big cliff starting in 2026 because that's 18 years after the 2008 financial crisis. And families suddenly weren't feeling all that bullish on having large families or maybe having any kids at all. And it really changed people's behaviors. And we're going to see the fruits or lack of fruits of that labor starting in 2026 and for years and years and years after that. So students who are...
That's a big tip.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, I don't know if students have much say in whether or not they were born at a certain time, but those who are middle schoolers right now, life's going to look potentially pretty sweet for you when you're coming up into mm-hmm. the college admission process. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's going to be a really different marketplace for students. And I think it's going to, you know, we're at a place right now in the admissions profession where we're rethinking how we do that work, how we choose, how we recruit and select students.
Mm.
So anyway, yeah. I think that the headline for that is students, you have and have always had power mm-hmm. in this process. Right. You have the power to say yes or no to the offer that a college makes you. And you get to choose the college that fits you best out of the options that you have once they do say yes to you.
Love it. Love it. Now, what's this piece of advice that you have for our families in the class?
This is one we use in the Anselmint House too. And full credit to my friend Maria Furtado at Colleges That Change Lives, because this one comes from her, but it has been a lifesaver for us, which is, you know, pick one day of the week where you as a family are going to talk about college. Because I think we all know, or at least can intuit, that the college process can be a cloud that hangs over your entire waking existence every day of the week, if you let it. And this gets back to that part where students have power. If you say, look, Sunday afternoon, that this is what we did for our family. So Sunday afternoons at between 2 and 4, we'd pick a little sliver. And that was when we'd talk about college. We'd talk about the financial aid offers. We'd talk about the essay. We'd talk about whatever it was we needed to take care of. And that gives both parents and the students the option during the week when I, for example, want to talk to my daughter and say, Katie, there's this thing that just came in from the University of Denver and blah, 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 blah. And she can say, Dad, that's a great idea, but it's Tuesday. Let's talk about this on Sunday. So right. It gives her the opportunity, and it makes it safe for kids and parents to just say, not right now. Is it an emergency? No? Cool. Let's park it. Let's get back to it on Sunday. And that way, you have control in the process. Oh. And don't let it control you. So that I've been dispensing that wisdom from Maria to families, and now I have deployed it myself with my son, who's now a college sophomore, and my daughter, who's a high school senior, and it's helping us remain sane.
Mm, so good. I've been saying something similar, so I'm going to sort of adapt mine.
Cool. Yeah.
So good.
Good.
So I want to give you some time to talk about Lawrence and the conservatory and auditioning and
sure.
all things Lawrence in just a second. But can we stick on this piece that about you being a dad for yeah. another second? And sure. if you could be so candid and share with the listeners what it's like for you, someone like you, to go through this process as a parent. What did you learn about this process while you were in the shoes, the very, you know, walk a mile in my moccasins, right?
Yeah.
For the last, you know, for your two kids, you've had to play that role of parent and resist the role of all-knowing sage, you know, advisor.
It's easy to resist it.
Right. Yeah. So what is it like to be a parent in this process?
Reminds you of what being a parent means, which is sometimes putting the interest of your child ahead of your own. And it can be, it's sometimes, depending on who you are as a parent, maybe a real natural thing for you. For some parents, it's more of an act of discipline, and I'm in that latter group. You know, I know better. I know what's a good fit for you and why this college would be the place that makes all of your dreams come true. But when your son looks at you after driving away from a college and saying, Dad, I think this is where I want to be. I don't know why. I just know. And I, you know, get all misty because I'm like, that's the magic moment we always talk about. But wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense because the other college is. But that voice has to go away because when you see if you're lucky enough to have your student, because this doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. We were lucky enough with our son to have him have that moment. I was thrilled that he chose it. But it wasn't where I thought he was supposed to be. But now that I see him as a college sophomore and he's getting ready to study abroad this semester, and he's become this super interesting version of himself, I'm like, this is exactly where you were supposed to be. And so it was, I'm hoping that moment happens with our daughter. We'll see what happens when we get there. It's still early in the process. But it's reminding myself that it really is not about me. It's about her, or it's about him. And letting that go.
Oh my God. So good. And that was good. Thank you for being, you know, just candid and raw about what it's like, you know. So anyway, listeners, there you have it. Now, in thinking about that moment, I mean, this is a I call it a rite of passage. Students are going from being seniors in high school to transitioning to college. So who are those students who would see Lawrence as their happy place? And they drive away and go, that is the place for me.
Sure. I think it's the student who has been a driven student, but is tired of competing with other people. And is ready to kind of be their best selves and not have to worry about what others think of them or how others are doing it better than them. Lawrence is a place that is positioned exceptionally well to help every individual student, each individual student, become the best versions of themselves. And we put a lot of resources behind it. You know, we've got more faculty per student than just about any college in the country, and that's by design. And so it's a place where if you are interested in something super narrow and really want to get your full geek on, we're there. If you are someone who is, we don't like to use the word undecided, because I found in all of our years of undecided students, they're not indecisive. They're just good at a lot of things and don't want to have somebody saying, you must choose now what to do for the rest of your life, because the voice always sounds like that. So you may be a multi-interested student. That's the term we use. We're great for you too, because it's the place I had mentioned earlier. Both and works well here. Our dean of the Conservatory of Music is a great example. He was, as an undergrad at Lawrence, an English and trombone performance major, double degree. And he likes to joke at our open houses because he tells the story, you know, two majors guaranteed to give you a life of financial success. And the parents usually laugh nervously when he says that. But this is a guy who went on after graduation to work at Microsoft for 16 years and head up their media acquisition. He worked on the first CD-ROM that was ever made in the world. Stuff that, you know, his education never prepared him for. But he was eminently prepared for it because he knew how to write. He knew how to play music. He knew how to think creatively. And that's the kind of place that Lawrence is. It helps you find the things you love and use them to live the life you're going to love.
If that's not a golden nugget, I don't know what is. I love that.
Yeah, but it's a great place. And if you are if you're interested in coming to Wisconsin, I can think of no greater small liberal arts college than us. It's a wonderful place.
It's a wonderful place, and it's beautiful too.
It is. Yeah. Well, it helps. We're unusual in that we're in a larger city and that we have this nice blend of urban. People in Los Angeles will laugh at my use of urban to describe Appleton. It's not a sprawling urban, but the blend of city and natural, having that river right there. And we're so close to Lake Michigan. It's only, you know, actually our other campus, we have this lodge up in the thumb of Door County. It's a 420-acre lodge up there, right on the shores of Lake Michigan. So students will go up there for weekend programs too. So it's this really cool, unusual blend of a city and a natural campus.
Now, Is there a way for, do you have summer programs? Is there a way for students to experience Lawrence even before becoming a senior in high school?
Yeah, so we have some summer institutes that students can participate in pre-college. They can just get in touch with the admissions office and get application materials for that. Otherwise, folks will usually schedule us in on a grand tour when they're visiting the Midwest. You know, they're coming to see us. They're probably on their way to see Carleton. And McAllister, maybe University of Chicago, Northwestern, places like that. And we're kind of right in the middle of both of those. We're like 90 minutes north of Milwaukee. Okay. And about 2.5-3 hours from Chicago. So if you chose to base out of Chicago and work your way up, easy to get to.
All right.
But if you know that Lawrence is the only place for you, you can fly right into Appleton International Airport. Like I said earlier, easy to get to there too.
Oh my goodness. This has been quite a treat. I'm going to wrap up in just a second, but I want to say thank you for your time today and for all these golden nuggets as the VP at Lawrence, but also as a parent, as a dad. So thank you. I appreciate your dad jokes and your dad wisdom. Well,
it was a real pleasure, Cynthia. Thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Well, my friends, here is the real truth. The truth is this process is a family process. You are indeed, make no mistake, you are shopping for a new home, a new community, a new place where you will break bread together with people who will influence your everyday life and for the rest of your life. Parents, the truth is you must put the interest of your child ahead of your own in this process. And as Ken said so beautifully, the gates are open. You just have to find which room inside is right for you. And in this process, there is a home that's right for you. You have to keep searching, keep going through until you find your happy place. And when you drive away, you'll know exactly that that's where you're supposed to be.
Well, that's all I have for you today, my friends. Thank you for joining us. If this episode has in any way fueled your confidence or helped build your dreams, please share this episode with 3 people in the next 30 minutes. Parents and mentors, if you're feeling extra loving today, go to iTunes and write us a review. This helps other listeners find us and begin their journey to Destination University. Oh my goodness, I can't thank Ken enough. Without realizing it, he not only shared about Lawrence, but his Catholic school background set us up for our 2-part Catholic institution miniseries. What do you think of when I say the ultimate Catholic college or university? I'll give you a hint. We just celebrated the famous Green Day just yesterday. Hello? Yep, you guessed it. Sean Whitman from the University of Notre Dame will be with us next week. I can't tell you. I enjoyed our conversation so much. His story and how he came to Notre Dame will make you understand why so many people love this institution. And let's face it, that says a lot coming from me, a true Trojan. I should remind parents that if you have a rising junior or senior, consider joining an essay camp or college application boot camp this summer. You can go to my website, drcynthiacolon.com, and click on Workshops and Camps. If your teen is a dreamer and doer, you don't want to miss enrolling in camp to get it done. We offer live stream options so you can join us from anywhere in the world, or you can make it a family adventure like we talked about today, and join us for the week of August 3rd at Chapman University and, you know, make it a Disneyland trip. Okay, I will see you next Wednesday, same time, same place. Until then, wherever you are, may you have a happy and sunny day. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening this week to Destination University. Be sure to join Dr. Cynthia Colon again next Wednesday at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel, and get one step closer to your success. We'll be right back. Are you ready to become the applicant every college wants to admit? Would you like to become the adult that models success? Then join the thousands of students, parents, and educators who have found the perfect solution. Dr. Cynthia Colone, author of Tips, Tales, and Truths for Teens, offers motivational and empowering workshops and keynote addresses for your school or organization. She fuels confidence in students on their road to university life. Cynthia coaches parents, educators, and professionals to model a success mindset for students. Go to drcynthiacolone.com to book her to speak, receive a free consultation, or have her as your personal coach. That's drcynthiacolone.com. Visit the site today.